Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Ruckers. Here we are again on a Monday morning, still basking in the glow of that Champions Cup final. La Rochelle are the champions once again. For Leinster, they're now familiar with a word that starts with a C and rhymes with yolk. But no egg on the face for our hitmen today, though. Stephen Jones, Sunday Times rugby correspondent, is here, as is Stuart Barnes. And as a starter for 10, gents, Steve and Stuart, I think you've probably been to every European final. Steve, best you've ever seen. Stuart, you can go after him.
Yes, it was. I always think that when you see a great game, Will, the most recent is always becomes the best you've ever seen. But this was just something else. It was supercharged as a backdrop with a Munsterman, you know, trying to do over Leinster. No love lost there, but it was a magnificent game. You thought, blimey, you know, this is going to be embarrassing now towards La Rochelle. Then you said, my God, it's going to be embarrassing towards Leinster. It had everything, Will. It had everything.
Stuart, the other one that comes up when you ask people about best ever finals, Stade Francais, Leicester, where did that one on Saturday rank for you?
Infinitely higher. You think of Waterloo and you think of Stade Francais, Leicester, and if you got Bath in your blood, you can remember far enough back, you remember when they beat Brive in Bordeaux. But this game was different. For one reason, throughout the first quarter of a century of professional rugby, the non-international game has failed to get anywhere near the international game in terms of quality, in terms of atmosphere, in terms of excitement. Saturday in Dublin, you had effectively the island team with a different coaching panel, but you had the tribalism of supporting your one team. And if you want to use the word tribalism, you had everything that La Rochelle brought and a team. I've read some stuff about their team of Galacticos. It's lazy journalism because they haven't got, you know, they're not going to sign all the world's best players, but they've got players from all over. Ronan O'Gara has conjured a great club team. And that occasion was right up there with Ireland versus France this year in the Six Nations as the best rugby event. So this was the day when, I can't say club because it's provincial as well, but, you know, the champions are club, so let's stick with that. This was the day when the club game proved it could be just as exhilarating, just as exciting, and just as intriguing for people like sponsors and television companies. It was a great day for rugby.
Yeah,
I suppose. Will, I'll just say this, Stuart. I do think the sad thing is about the Heineken Cup is there was a time not that long ago when Toulouse Wasps were at their greatest, and possibly Munster, who were never a great side but a great competitive side. There was a time when people were saying, look, I've just watched Wales, Italy, or I've just watched England, Scotland, and I'm not going to go, I'm going to follow my club from now on. There was a time, but that receded. That receded, as you say, and a visitor from Mars would have had no idea that wasn't the top two international rugby teams in the world playing in Dublin on Saturday.
It was one of those, wasn't it, Steve and Stuart, and we'll get onto it in more detail in a sec, that I feel like this weekend or this week or so is going to perfectly sum up the mad, horrible and glorious season that we've had, where all the news that we've been writing about has largely been negative, but we've had some of all-time great fixtures that have happened. Ireland-France was amazing in the Six Nations. This final was amazing. Let's hope we get an amazing Sale Saracens Prem final as well. But everything we've been talking about off the pitch has been awful and horrible, hasn't it? So we'll probably have to deal with both elements of that today on the pod, because we're going to look back on the Champions Cup final. As we said, La Rochelle beat Leinster in an absolute classic. We'll also touch on the Challenge Cup as Toulon easily defeated Glasgow, and turn our attention to the Premiership final, Saracens and Sale facing off this weekend. And joining us will be the Sale Sharks wing from 2006, when Sale last won the title, Mark Cueto. Plus, we'll name our god or goddess of the week and try and sneak in a chat with Adam Radwan too, playing for the Barbarians against the World 15 on Sunday. But first, why don't we get into all the Champions Cup action? Right, lads, so loads on the pod today. But first, you both had a bit of a mare trying to get back from Ireland, did you? Have you landed safely back home? Was that a bit of a triumph to make it? Was it as bad as Marseille last year, Steve?
It was much worse than that. I have to say that we weren't into bed at our earliest, because I just think, we were with colleagues, and on Saturday night, all you wanted to do is have a quiet beer and just go through everything we've seen, which was very pleasurable. But Dublin Airport is almost ceased to exist as something where you can get through it and come out the other end. I have never seen a zoo like it. I've never seen disorganisation like it. And I think when we took off, the whole plane cheered that we finally escaped. So next time they have this campaign that Dublin must never get the Heineken Cup again, and actually, unless they improve the airport, it must never stage a Six Nations game ever again.
Steve, you can't slag it off for next season though, because it's going to be at Spurs. So it's going to be the greatest final ever seen, isn't it, at Spurs?
One of the great things about going to Spurs is, you become immune to the home team. But secondly, you don't have to, unless you're from Dublin, have to go there through Dublin Airport. So I'm looking forward to Spurs. I will be prepared to negotiate the traditional 10-mile traffic jam to get there, but as long as you don't have to go through Dublin.
Sorry, if Steve had got out of bed early, we wouldn't have this problem.
I was on a flight just after you.
Wow, about an hour later, Steve. It's a major difference getting out of your hotel before 6 o'clock and afterwards. It's psychological, and it shows the measure of a man who's prepared to eat and drink till midnight and then get on the plane.
I was a measure of a man who's who lives in the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maidenhead, and would not be out in the sticks with you and Mrs. Barnes.
Well, talking of early starts, that segues horribly into the start that Leinster get. It doesn't really work, does it? But anyway, we're going to do it. That first 10 minutes, Stuart, you've watched pretty much all of the European Cup rugby that's ever happened, as has Steve. That's got to be up there with some of the most glorious rugby we've seen, isn't it? Even though they lost in the end, that opening salvo was unbelievable from Leinster, wasn't it?
There are times, Will, when I feel like I've watched just about all the rugby that there has ever been. And that, I hate to say it, sometimes is a negativity of, oh my God, another game, another 80 minutes of this dross. I turned to Peter O'Reilly, our Irish colleague, after 15 minutes when it was 17-0. And I said, I think I've never seen a more accurate and intense quarter an hour of rugby at any level. They might not have had the great New Zealand teams offloading and attacking games, but I've never seen defence so powerful, so accurate, so game-changing. All of that came after a quite brilliantly created first try, where they'd worked out exactly how to take La Rochelle on. It was off the scale in terms of its quality, and that's what makes it such a great final. Because after the game, Gregory Aldred was saying, "Well, we were serene when we got back at halftime," and he said, and O'Gara had said, he said, "I told them they'd come hard." He said, "First try was a bit of a shock. 12-0 after 6 minutes, I didn't really see that. 17-0 after 11. I was concerned," but the La Rochelle players just held their nerve and just played their way back into it. And, and I would say La Rochelle deserved to win, but that first 15 minutes was the highest standard of rugby I have seen in a long, long time. It was incredible. And so whilst it does raise a few doubts about the core of the Irish team losing to a French club team at home, you've got to remember that this was something quite spectacular, and a huge congratulations to La Rochelle for withstanding a majestic 20 minutes from Leinster.
Yeah.
Well, can I just ask Stuart or yourself, Leinster clearly decided what they had to do. They were up against a massive team who were not the quickest. Leinster knew they had to play really, really rapidly, rip into it, be accurate, fast, take their chances, all of which they did. Do you think, lads, that actually, when it came down to it, they didn't know what they were doing apart from that? That worked brilliantly, but they had no answer when the other style of play on view, and how brilliant to have two styles, when the La Rochelle style was imposed upon them, they had no more success in dealing with it than La Rochelle had had with the Leinster style in the early moments. And I just wonder whether they spent so much time planning a blistering opening passage, they didn't do enough time on what was the inevitable revival of La Rochelle.
I suppose, Will. Devil's advocate point to that, I suppose, is if Ross Byrne had hit the two conversions he missed right at the start, that probably would have been a completely unassailable lead. Like 17 was the biggest margin ever overturned in a Champions Cup final. And that could have been 20-odd.
No, those ifs about conversions are a nonsense. The fact that La Rochelle played with such composure, had they been 21-0 down, that ain't such a big difference to 17-0. And they were able to come back through that. You can't watch a game of rugby and say ifs. You know, he hit the post twice. They were good kicks. It's unlucky, but they didn't go over. The hypothetical world of rugby makes no sense and is not true. It's just not true at all.
I also think that there's going to be a fascinating, fascinating few months now, because Eddie Jones, who never picks the people who were lauded in the media, now has to apply that same principle to Will Skelton, who has become now level with the great locks I've seen, Martin Johnson, Simon Shaw. He is right up there. And Skelton, for Skelton to do the whole game at the rate he played, and don't forget he took a lot of ball at first receiver, was probably the greatest display I've ever seen from an individual forward in any match. So, Eddie, are you going to ignore the media and ignore the public opinion now and leave out Skelton? Because if you are, you'll be a bigger idiot than we thought you were.
He was extraordinary. He's now won 4 European Cups, a couple with Sarri, a couple with La Rochelle, which basically, if you want to win the tournament, you've got to sign him. And that'd be mad to leave him out, wouldn't it, Stuart? If you're the Wallabies coach, you've got to have a massive lock in there. And he's now sort of, his reputation is preceding him, isn't it?
Don't care about his reputation, and nor does Eddie Jones care about his quality. And he's probably the most effective lock forward in the world at the moment. He is the most effective lock forward in the world at the moment, therefore he has to pick him. But Eddie Jones, if we want to seg back to the subject of coaching, from Eddie Jones to Stuart Lancaster, last year Leinster were the best team in Europe and O'Gara rocked them with a tactical plan that confused them and they never got their way back. This time Leinster did the rocking, but O'Gara's team were able to overcome it. Now, there's two things here. I think Steve is absolutely right. They came out almost as if it was a horse race, the trainer said, they're going to be coming back at the end, so we got to go so fast, we're 20 lengths clear coming around the home bend. And only daft trainers do that, because your horse will run out of steam. And I think they put so much into creating clear water that they did, I wouldn't say run out of steam, but their ability to be as precise and to be as powerful in the second half, it did drain away, because the last 10 minutes when they were trying to get back, that's desperation, and desperation is a different thing. So I feel the game plan didn't work, and that takes me to the other issue, which is Stuart Lancaster is a brilliant developer of players. He puts together superb teams when everything works. And I've been hearing for years that, oh God, what did England do getting rid of Stuart Lancaster? But Stuart's weakness seems to remain the same, which is when you take him on and the game plan fails, there's nothing left. And it comes through the players, but that's a coach saying, this is how we play. And I felt that last year O'Gara exposed him, and I feel that this year there's something of the same. So I think it is a triumph for Ronan O'Gara over Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah, yeah.
And a reminder that developing is very important, and Stuart's brilliant at that. But at the very highest level, you've got to understand how you just tweak a game and change a plan. And Leinster, in the last 2 years, have shown themselves to be probably the best team in Europe in terms of let them play and watch them go. But in terms of somebody putting a spoke in the engine, they remind me of Stuart Lancaster's England. And you're going, what next? And that goes back to the whole Eddie Jones thing about, listen to me, this is my game plan, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. When it works, when you pack a dominant, great. When it doesn't work, it leaves you exposed, it leaves the coach exposed, and that's why I still have question marks about Lancaster for all the brilliant things he has undoubtedly done for Leinster.
So, Steve, on that point, Lancaster's now moving on to Racing 92, and they're bringing in Jack Nienaber, as we said on the pod last week, the little-known Jack Nienaber. Decent signing, that. And I suppose Leo Cullen's staying as well, and it's still his team. But this sort of Lancaster era, if we put it like that, Leinster losing three Champions Cup finals in 5 years, and also not winning the URC in the last two, basically to they sacrificed that on the altar of the Champions Cup, which they then didn't win twice. Does that have to, I mean, I made a joke at the top about choking, but does that have to be viewed as a failure, regardless of the rugby Leinster have played and the way that they've transformed a lot of the attacking side of the game, not actually getting it done in these big games when a lot has gone in their favour?
Of course it does, Will, because if that had been Connaught or Munster and then they'd done exactly the same, it would be seen as a triumph because they almost did it. Mm. It is a categorical failure for Leinster, and they would surely say that themselves. Nienaber has always been a parrot on the shoulder of Razzy Erasmus rather than the coach. That seems to me very odd. And you know, Leo has been a great lad. He took defeat brilliantly. In fact, he was alone in taking the defeat brilliantly as far as the Leinster reaction was concerned. But I think now, they're not approaching a crossroads. I think they've come past the crossroads and they're going to have to redo it, because I don't think you can have Nienaber and Leo there together trying to merge into a coaching group. So I think probably if they do bounce back and make next year's final, it would be staggering. But even more staggering if they won it,
Stuart.
I don't think they choked. I wouldn't say that at all. I think that would be almost an insult to La Rochelle. But I would say I thought that they were outthought and outfought, and I think that's the difference. And the outthought bit also, you know, if Sexton had been there, he's not the perfect player, but he's one of the best we've seen for a long time. And I think Sexton would have tried to just manipulate things. It asked questions about Ross Byrne. You can be an imitation of a great player, but if Sexton gets injured at the World Cup, it's no good. An Islander struggling in scrums like they were at the weekend, then you've got to have a player who's not an imitation, who's the real McCoy. Ireland got a problem at 10. And I thought, in terms of being outthought, you know, Ronan O'Gara gives the best press conferences in front of television cameras, and he gives them after games. He's fascinating, but he's fascinating because he's a thinker on the game. And you know, I go back to that. You know, Ronan O'Gara was on the England shortlist of three. My views were very vocal at the time. And, you know, Steve Borthwick was a good, solid, sensible, typically English choice. But by God, if you could have given me Robertson and O'Gara, I'd have taken that all day long. And I think that Saturday was another reminder of just what an accomplished... Ronan is now a better director of rugby stroke coach than he was a fly half. And he was a magnificent fly half. And the magnificence of his game as a player was not built around speed or anything, or big hitting tackling, was built around brains. And it's great to see a brainy operator making the transition from being one of the best in the world in his position to being one of the best coaches. So
Stuart,
To me, it's O'Gara's triumph with an amazing array of talented players.
Mm-hmm. I didn't agree with you in terms of when he first started playing about his greatness as a player, but I changed my mind when he kept on ringing me to complain. So I decided after that he was a great player. Just to make one more point, Will, about this game on Saturday, the reason probably why I loved it more than any other reason, and that is that these days we hear scrummaging, you must be fit, not carrying any weight, you must be dynamic in the loose, you must make all your tackles. So then you come up with really good rugby players like Ellis Genge and Carl Sinclair and other countries, you know, Thomas Francis and all these guys, they're all fit, they can run, but actually La Rochelle looked like they've been on the pies up front for about 6 years. They're absolutely gigantic, and the jerseys have to be extended to fit them. Uini Antonio was the monster was replaced by Georges-Henri Colomb, who's even bigger. Now, actually, those guys can play a bit of rugby as well. They're not going to win the Olympic 100 metres, but they were unstoppable, and you can play all shapes and sizes. You can even make the likes of Antonio get around the field. But the important thing is they stuck the finger in the scrums and the mauls. They stuck the finger on Leinster and Leinster squealed. So don't tell us any more about you have to be 16 stone rippling fit to play international rugby. You do not. It's all shapes and sizes, even at the top level.
I want to give Steve a little bit of credit for once here. We were in our hotel in Dublin having a bite of lunch and after a cup of coffee, and we were chatting about the game. And we talked about Andrew Porter, and Steve said to me then, it's easy to say he struggled. It's easy to write that in hindsight. We were saying, Steve said, Porter looks to me like a tight head just surviving on the other side. And that was proved to be true. I can recall saying to Steve, I had a moment, and I said, what's the name of that bloody Springbok World Cup winning tight head? And Jonesy, of course, obsessed with scrummages, said Frans Malherben. I said, yes, of course it's Malherben. And I've chatted to some of the most progressive and interesting English coaches, and they say, Malherbe's no good. All he does is scrummage. But you have to be able to do your first job well. And if you're a prop, your first job is to scrummage and lift, and the rest are bonuses. And you want the bonuses, but they're vital. Any position on the field, you've got to do your job right. And I go back to Ross Byrne. Ross Byrne's job is to dictate a game and to be able to just change it under pressure. And if you can't do that, it's no good being a 90% goal kicker. That's not enough. You've got to get those basics right. And fair dues to Jonesy, he brought up the subject of Porter, and Porter was all over the place. And he's a brilliant rugby player, by the way, but that ain't enough. And you think about it, Ireland have got South Africa in the World Cup. Mm. The box will have been watching that and going, hello, what we got here? And if Ireland play New Zealand, it should be remembered that for all the errors New Zealand made in the last year and a half of the international rugby, they're bringing back a very strong scrummage, and the All Blacks will look at Ireland and thinking, we can just tear the foundations from beneath their feet. And if you get your foundations pulled away in a World Cup quarterfinal, you're out.
Yeah, so Steve, you've perfectly teed me up, Stuart, for that question. And on that, we like to look forward, don't we, in journalism and what the next thing is. So the South Africans, are they just licking their lips now going, well, putting it fairly simply, they play a fairly similar style to La Rochelle. And I was speaking to some people over in South Africa when I was last there, and they were saying South Africa's plan for Ireland is basically to smash them to bits and ruin the breakdown. So are Ireland worried now? Are they looking at what happened to them in two finals and going, we've got South Africa in our pool and that looks a bit horrible?
That's a very interesting question, Will. I've got two answers to that, really. First of all, yes, that's exactly what they will try and do. And as Stuart says, they'll be sort of slobbering all over the replays of the Heineken Cup final. And that is what they want. It's very, very odd, though, because I've been looking around the last few weeks and sort of speaking to people in the four representative nations of the Rugby Championship to see what their teams are. It is absolutely amazing how similar the South African and the New Zealand teams are going to be to what they were 4 years ago. So old Mal Herb will be there. Malcolm Marx and Bongi will be up front. And Etzebeth and Duyaga will be in the second row. So there is no, I don't think there's any doubt as to how the South Africans are going to play. And you're so right. I suppose it's a bit boring that we already know the tactical setup of the Ireland South Africa game now. And I guess the team that wins that game could be the team that comes out and does something that they're not expected to do. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But Malherbe versus Porter is already, well, I don't think it'll be Malherbe against Porter, because the Irish now will be under emergency alert to find and boost up a new loose head. But that's where that game will almost certainly be decided.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll go? Do you remember the Lions, Steve, in South Africa? And everyone was talking about the big English props, Roundtree and Leonard, taking on the Springboks. And Telfer came up with one of the greatest tricks of his life when, at the last minute, we had the, relatively speaking, diminutive Wallace and Tom Smith.
Yeah.
Called into the test team, and they stopped South Africa getting into the scrummage position.
Big old Ox, Durant and all, they had them all, didn't they?
The Ox had no one to push against. And I just wonder, because we've talked a lot, and I think maybe Cullen and Lancaster were a little bit naive, but Farrell has shown himself not to be. Farrell has shown himself, you know,
yeah.
I've been praising Ireland to the roofs, and this wasn't Ireland. It was the Ireland, most of the Ireland players, but it wasn't the Ireland management. And I think Farrell has shown himself able to think on the hoof now. And I think, in a way, he might be lucky, because this might be the red alert warning that says, just because we won a Grand Slam and just because Leinster play great rugby most of the time, we could get caught out here. And it might just be in terms of their scrummaging and in terms of who the cover for Sexton is, that Farrell's thinking this is a late in the day lifetime, but he's smart enough to grab it, I think.
Well, all of that is to come down the line. Before we move on to the Prem final and all the things that are coming next, we better just have a quick, very quick wrap-up of the Challenge Cup. And Stuart, we've not only now had three French Champions Cup winners in a row, we've also had three French Challenge Cup winners in a row. Toulon, Sergio Parisse, Dan Big went off early. Disappointing from Glasgow, that, but Toulon thoroughly deserved that on Friday night.
Yeah, and Toulon aren't one of France's better teams at the moment. It was just awesome to see someone like Charles Olivant, who is another contender for a world team. Things are still ticking along pretty nicely for France, despite that Toulouse loss in Dublin. What interested me again, if you'd have said to me, Six Nations combination of the tournament, I might very well have said Tui Pilotu and Hugh Jones. And I think on Friday night, we saw the value of a fly half who understands how to read a game and manipulate space. They played outside Finn Russell, who's a master of just putting defenders where he wants them before he passes. Miotti, the young Argentinian backup fly half, just drifted where the pass took him, and it made it very easy for the powerful Toulon midfield to just smash two blokes who had looked world beaters for Scotland. So great win for Toulon. You know, they had a horrible finals record in the Challenge Cup. Great win for them. Glasgow, massively disappointing. But what I would say is that's what happens. That's the value of a great attacking fly half, the way he can make those outside him look so good.
I just thought
that Glasgow, I really admire them, because they've not got all the resources in the world, but they've got real quite passionate support. And I hope that what was wrong there was that it was their first really big final and they will learn from it, because they were so disappointed, so apparently lacking in passion. I'm sure they'll be kicking themselves throughout the season. So if they learn from it, they can definitely come again. I think they're a decent club with decent players. And just finally about Toulon, I love Toulon and always have done, but Dan Bigger goes off after 3 minutes. The guy they bring on, Itayo West, dominated the final last year when he was in La Rochelle colours. So even their reserves are good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from fly halves, you both tee me up nicely, because the Premiership final's next, the the finals keep on coming. And there's two pretty decent fly halves going against each other in that game as well. Owen Farrell, George Ford, we know all about those. But so next, why don't we talk about that and tee up the Gallagher Premiership final, Sale Sharks against Saracens, coming on Saturday. Right, guys, so yes, as we said, the finals keep on coming. We've got Saracens, the top team of the league, against Sale, the second team of the league, both desperate to win the Premiership. Saracens haven't since 2019 and Sale haven't since 2006. Been ages for them, never been in the final since then either. So, Steve, where do you think it's going to go? It's the final we've been predicting for a while, but can Sale have enough? Is there power enough to beat the new attacking style of Saracens?
It's funny, my memory tells me that they were given no chance whatsoever in 2006 to beat Leicester, and they absolutely murdered them. Well, look, we all know Saracens are favourites. Saracens are just a little slightly underpowered in their pack, I feel, compared to
a skeleton short.
They're great. They're one skeleton short, exactly, and have never replaced him, but how could you? But I think, first of all, it's a great final because I think Saracens deserve to be in it. They were still fuming over not playing well in the final last year, mm-hmm. and have been ever since. And Mark McCall says it every week. I also think that Sale on their day, a real tough bunch of boys. I love Carpenter, the fullback, Rafi Quirk and Gus Ward, two excellent scrum halves. I just think they're a great club. They've done brilliantly, coaches, players, and the owner. And I think it will be closer than people think. I think it will probably be like certainly less than 10 points. I do think Saracens will win it. I think it'll be a great final. But again, Will, you've got this thing that's tugging at you. And that is, it's been an excellent season for a club rugby, professional club rugby, wherever you go, on the field. As soon as it gets on the field, it's great. As soon as it gets off the field, it's dire.
Yeah.
And there's no way that I think we're going to talk about London Irish in a minute. Mm. There is no way that we can celebrate flat out when we've lost Wasps and Worcester, and London Irish, as we speak, are also in danger. So it is a bizarre thing that the game's okay on the field, but a shocker off.
Totally. And just on that note too, and it's slightly related in a way because it's off field, but I just hope that there's actually a decent crowd at this game on the weekend. That all the reports we're getting is that it probably won't be sold out. And I guess that's possibly the reality of having two teams in the final that aren't the most well-supported, and one of them the second furthest away from the National Stadium. But yeah, I think each club gets about 5,000 tickets each and could request more, but that's a lot of other seats to fill with other fans, isn't it? And you just hope that we get beyond 50, 60, because otherwise it just sums up a bit of a sad scene, doesn't it?
It does. I would have thought 50, 55... would be decent. You know, don't forget, some of the epics before have been when two great teams have met with two great sets of supporters. And also, like, there was one where I think Martin Johnson and Lawrence Dallaglio were both retiring, that sort of thing. That hasn't got this ring to it. We're very much in the foothills of recovery in the Premiership. But 55,000, I think, would be really good. And then there's hope then, Will, that actually it's a classic game, because this stage of the football season, all the other sports have to be brilliant to get a look in. So we need rugby to get a look in on Saturday.
Yeah, well, talking about classic finals, we've got someone who played in one of those coming on the pod in a second. Mark Cueto, 2006 winner. He will join us next on The Ruck. Right, so as promised, next on the pod, we're joined by Sale Sharks legend Mark Cueto, part of the last Sale team to win the title in 2006. Mark, it's been 17 years. It's been a while, hasn't it? Are you excited this week?
It's crazy, isn't it? And I'm just so happy for the lads and the owners and Alex. Everyone's worked so hard. And I think I forget, because it's been so much fun, really, being on the other side of the fence, not playing. You forget how long Simon and Jed and Michelle have... It's been... I think this is the end of the seventh year. Mm. So... You know, it's nearly been a decade, which is crazy, really, to think that they've owned it for that long. And, you know, so for them, you know, to finally, to Twickenham, it's just brilliant. It's brilliant for everyone. Alex has only been at the club, what, two and a bit seasons. You know, the impact that he's had is enormous. I look at, obviously, the young back three that we've got, you know, Reedy, Roebuck and Carps, you know, all Northern lads. You know, Beaumont, the Currys, you know, there's a real northern feel to the team, but equally chucking some sort of world class talent in, you know, whether it's the Dupreez, you know, there's obviously a strong South African taste there. It is the more you think about it, that, you know, it's so similar to to the, in terms of the makeup of the team and the squad, it's so similar to that, that squad that did it back in.
Steve, what do you remember about that season yourself? You would have covered it extensively, that Sale winning it.
I remember it being, first of all, they weren't favourites, but the longer the game went on, the better and better they became, and rubbed it in at the end with a try from deep. And
Chris Mayer.
Fantastic. Chris Mayer, that's right.
That try cost my brother-in-law £1,000. It was the only guy. I remember coming off the pitch post-match and everyone's obviously buzzing. And we go up into the players' lounge, wherever everyone was meeting, family and friends, and everyone's high-fiving and hugging and kissing and crying. And I see my brother-in-law, and he's got a right face on him. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, mate? And he had a bet on the margin of win.
Right.
He bet that we'd win and it'd be within whatever, 15 points. And that try took the score beyond his margin.
Oh, brutal.
He was like, where's Chris Mayer? He just cost me £1,000.
I tell you what, Mark, one of the guys I always admired for Sale for years and never got the he never really got the kudos was Schofield. He was absolutely brilliant player for me and was better than a lot of people who won caps.
Yeah, Sco is one of my best mates, you know, and we've been mates for 20 plus years now. It's mad. And, you know, we played amateur rugby. He was playing for Old Winnings when I was playing for Alton Kersal, when we were sort of coming through the ranks, as it were. We spent, as with a lot of that group mentioned before, sort of Charlie Hodgson, myself, Scoey, Chris Jones, Andy Tittrell, you know, there was, I've probably missed a couple there as well. There was five or six of us that all came through what was the academy then, but all played, you know, for Sale for 10 years together. Pretty much everyone played for England, and, you know, a lot of us got on that Lions tour in 05 as well. My first season was 01, and I think the season before we'd finished ninth in the league or 10th in the league. That following season, we finished second in the league. There was no playoff. Sound making myself sound old again. There was no playoffs, but we finished second in the league. And I think we won the Parker Penn Shield, you know, the old like Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
And it was the first piece of silverware in the club's history, I think. And, you know, we went on to, I think we won that again, and then we won the Challenge Cup, and then we won the Premiership. So, you know, we had a real, from sort of 01 through to 06, was a crazy time, crazy, good, successful time for the club. You know, like I said, people went mad in 2000 and what are we in now? 20, the last, you know, the last Lions tour when Sammy's had six players, everyone's great. Oh my God, how can one club have, you know, so many players? You know, Sale had, like I said, Sale had five or six on that Lions tour in 05. I think, I can't remember the final score, but we scored 40-odd points.
45-20 it was, yeah.
To score 45 points in a final of anything, let alone the Premiership, is crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know, obviously we've all watched the game at the weekend. Like, it was a ridiculous game. But, you know, you rarely see more than 25 points, you know, wins a game in a final. So for us to put, you boys know better than me, but just off the top of my head, thinking out loud, I bet there isn't a team scored more than 45 points in a Premiership final in the history of the game. So, you know, I think we probably enjoyed the underdog. I think most teams that I've, well, certainly Sale, have always enjoyed that underdog title.
I think, Mark, that's the point, though, isn't it? Sometimes it was just the history, and Leicester are a big club. I mean, obviously, I was working at Sky at the time, and it was inconceivable to me why people were saying Leicester are the favourites. I fully thought you would win it and win well, and that's not hindsight, but you had the players in the big positions, and you'd been better than them
in
the season. But that brings you to this one. Are you concerned? Because Saracens have been the best English team all season. They finished top of the league like you did all those years ago. Yeah. And they have looked probably overall the team to beat.
Yeah, no, I agree, Barnes. I think I watched, obviously, come this end of the season, you watch the games a bit closer, and I watched that Stabbing semi-final against Saints, and they were absolutely frighteningly good first half. Now, I don't know, take nothing away from Saints, but I don't know if it was because Saints were a little bit off the pace, or if they were off the pace because Saris was so good. And Owen Farrell, mate, I don't know, he's a freak of nature, isn't he? One thing I would say is funny because I sort of take the mick out of Robbo. The year we won the league, including the playoffs, I was Sale's top try scorer with 4 tries, right? Previous seasons, you'd score 14, 15, 16 tries. Now, I scored 4 tries that season, and one of them was in that final. Robbo scored more drop goals than he did tries that season. So it shows that we had a really basic, efficient sort of game plan. Obviously, you know, do you want to score 15 tries or do you want to score 20 tries and come third in the league or do you want to score 3 tries and win it? Mm. It's a simple question. It's a simple answer, isn't it? Yeah. We're constant. And I think back to when England won the World Cup in 2003. Yeah, they were scoring some decent tries, like, you know, Benny Cohen, Josh, Robbo, Walsh, Dan Luger, they were all scoring tries, but they weren't, I know there wasn't a bonus point then, but if there was, they weren't winning games with bonus points every match. But when you get success, I've sort of gone off point a little bit here, but nobody cares about style and entertainment and, you know, flowing rugby. If you win stuff, all you remember is winning stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, that's where we can end it maybe, Mark, because that's the key for the weekend, isn't it, to actually get over the line. Yeah. It's going to be an amazing final. We've taken loads of your time, so I really appreciate you coming on. Are you getting down there? Are you going to be at Twickenham?
I'll be there. I'm taking the family again.
Awesome.
The boys can't wait. There's going to be loads of people there. So I think we've got a game on our hands. I think it'd be fair to say that obviously Saracens are favourites, but that said, I think we've got a pack that can match, at least match, if not edge Saris. And that's when you know you can get in a game then, because I don't think there's really another team in the Premiership that can do that. And that's why dominant, the game never changes. So let's hope that we turn up. And, you know, you never know. You never know, it's a final, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Look at that game. After 10 minutes, would you have put your money on La Rochelle winning that game?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, look, all the best to Sale Sharks and Saris, but we've been chatting to you, so we'll leave it with Sale this time. But really appreciate you coming on the pod, Mark, and enjoy your trip down. And I can imagine you and Andy Farrell over your Fortnum and Mason hamper in the West car park, right? Unlikely.
It'll be good. Yeah, there's one person I wouldn't back. There's not many that I wouldn't back myself against, but I wouldn't back myself against.
Awesome, Mark. Thanks so much for coming on.
Appreciate your invite. Yeah, cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Right, so as promised, our last guest on the Ruck is Adam Radwan, and Adam is set for quite an exciting week because he's part of the Barbarians team that's taking on the World 15 this weekend. Adam, that sounds a bit of fun, doesn't it? What's your week looking like? Yeah. Is there not much training, quite a lot of drinking? Have you had the schedule through?
I haven't actually had the schedule through yet, so I don't know. I don't know what the kind of plans and the schedule will entail, but it's definitely going to be like a week to remember, and it's definitely going to be really fun. And I'm just really excited for it, to be honest. I think it'll be brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. So looking at, I've got the squad in front of me. What names leapt out of you when you thought, I'm going to share a pitch with these sort of guys? Alan Wynne-Jones, Stephen Luatua, Rob Simmons, yeah. Aaron Wainwright. Who else? Karevi. Are you going to get the ball?
I think there's so many. It would be, I probably couldn't pull out one or two. Like, there's all those guys you mentioned. I think the back line's also amazing. I feel like incredibly lucky and excited to be part of that team and to kind of share the pitch with them guys. It's a massive honour as well.
Yeah. So one of your last experiences at Twickenham was pretty good, wasn't it? Hat trick, wasn't it, for England?
Yeah, that was, I think that was my debut, and then I played again against Tonga and scored again. I think I've played there twice, and I've absolutely loved both times. So really looking forward to being down there again. I think the crowd will be brilliant, and I'm just really excited. I think looking at their team as well, it's going to be a pretty nuts game. I think their team's pretty crazy. So I'm just, like I said, I'm kind of just excited to be part of it.
So for those that don't know, the World 15 backline has a combo: Adam Hastings, Israel Folau, Marika Kurabeti, Nal Marpe, Sabu Nkosi, Reece Patra, Nick Phipps, Charles Piatau, Semi Radradra. There's quite a lot of big hitting Polynesian lads in that, aren't there, Adam?
Yeah, it's a star-studded backline, and I think it's, like I said, I'm just excited. I think, you know, it's the reason you play the game is to play with and against the guys in the Barbarians team and the World 15 team. So it's ultimately why, like, you want to play with and against the best. So I think it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah. And so what happens for you this week? You're heading down to London, to the big lights of London in tomorrow, are you? And then you just get straight on the beers? How does it work?
Honestly, I have no idea. All I know at the minute is
secret.
That I'm heading to London tomorrow. I don't know what tomorrow's going to entail. I'm kind of going there not knowing what to expect. I still need to pack, so I'll pack for all occasions.
Shoes
and all
for the nightclub.
pack for all for everything, really. So yeah. I don't know what it's going to entail. I'm looking forward to kind of meeting everyone and seeing the schedule, and obviously having just like the socializing and stuff. It'll be really good crack.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know it's an exhibition game and a bit of fun, but is there a challenge too with things coming on the horizon, the World Cups and all that, to put yourself back in the frame for that sort of thing? Do you want to put on a decent performance in a big stadium against some decent players and show what you can do at that sort of top level?
Yeah, of course. It's like I said, it's like an exhibition game, but it's ultimately, I think all those guys are extremely competitive, and everyone will want to do well and want to win. And yeah, I'm no different. I think it's an opportunity for me to you know, ultimately I'm trying to get back in the England side and involved with that stuff. So this is obviously a great opportunity for that.
Yeah. Have you had many chats with Steve? I know you weren't in the recent Six Nations squad, but have you had a shout about what could happen in the summer potentially yet?
It's been a little bit of chat, I think. Obviously, nice. I've spoke a little bit with some of the S&C guys there. I know what I need to do to get back in the team. I haven't really spoke to Steve, but I think, you know, ultimately I'm pretty aware of what I need to do to get back in there, and I'm confident that, you know, over time I can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully a couple of tries at Twickenham on the weekend against a decent opposition will help, won't it?
Hopefully, that's the plan.
Awesome. Well, look, really appreciate you coming on the pod, Adam. And for anyone who wants to go to the game on Sunday, there's still tickets available. So go and have a look. It'll be a great day out on Sunday. Usually England Bar Bars that weekend, but this time the World 15 coming. Coached by Steve Hansen. Eddie Jones is doing the Bar Bars and Adam's going to be in the team. So what more could you want, right?
Yeah, I think for a neutral, I think it's going to be absolutely brilliant. I think my family are going to make the trip down, a couple of friends. Perfect. I think it'll just be a great atmosphere. It'll be a load of fun and I'm looking forward to it.
Happy days. Well, really appreciate you coming on the pod, Adam, and all the best. Enjoy whatever comes this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Perfect. Really appreciate that, Adam. Enjoy it and speak to you soon.
I will do. Cheers.
Right, everyone, so packed ruck this week and we had so much fun with Mark Quater that Steve Jones has had to disappear, but we'll get, Stuart, your God or Goddess nomination of the week in a second and I'll do mine. But we first, as we like to cover some news on this podcast, just flag the situation which we talked about at the top of the show about London Irish. So just to sum it up for all you listeners, and you should keep yourselves updated across the times over the week because there's going to be more to come on this, but essentially, the RFU have given London Irish a deadline of May the 30th, so next Tuesday, to either show that their current owner, Mick Crossan, is prepared to fund the team for the full 23-24 season, or the American consortium has taken over the club, it's been completed and ratified, and they can fund Irish next year. If they can sort that by close of play next Tuesday, then that's fine, but if they can't, they'll be kicked out of the league, and it's likely that the winding up process will start. And to be honest, there's precious little hope around the game that this will end well with 6 days of working days left. Payday's on Friday. They've got then 2 working days to prove their viability. The wage bill's around 500 grand a month, we understand. So there's a lot of money that needs to change hands very quickly. So as we teed up at the top of the show, could be another dark week in rugby, having had such a good one of on the field, off the field is retains its chaos, doesn't it? But so that's that covered off, and let's hope there's a positive resolution, but it doesn't look likely, I'm afraid to say. Next Monday we will talk it all through when we do our last pod of the season to round it all off. But for now, should we try and end on a positive note and pick a God of the Week? Stuart, where are you going to go for yours?
I think the Atlantic Coast. Pretty obvious place. Ronan O'Gara was a strong contender, but I'm a great believer that, you know, players are the ones who deserve the ultimate glory. And Gregory Aldrich's going to be my God of the Week. And I know he was awarded Man of the Match. He's one of these blokes who seems to get it no matter how influential or not on the pitch. He's a very popular pick. But for me, the way in which he led this team, the cool, calm composure when their world was falling apart and he was pulling them in and just saying, hey, we can do this. And what he was saying at halftime about, we were serene, we believed, we trusted ourselves. I thought it was a wonderful example of leadership. Here's a bloke who, if you want him to lead by example, will carry 30 times for 100 metres. He can do that. But I think on Saturday, it was even more important that whilst all hell was raging around him, he maintained that cool composure and serenity. So my God of the Week is Gregory Aldrich.
Yeah, fine nomination. And as you didn't go for him, I will. Ronan O'Gara, I mean, back-to-back Champions Cups. That's not to be sniffed at in the slightest. And doing a number on the same team 3 years in a row, the bogeymen he's created over in La Rochelle, extraordinary effort. And let's hope he holds up his end of the bargain, because I think he said after the game that he's going to be drinking till Friday. I think they've got Stade Francais next Saturday, so that might be a few hangovers in that coaching box. But Ronan O'Gara, he's my God of the Week. And I mean, all the kings in La Rochelle, they could all be gods, couldn't they? But amazing effort. Well, we've packed loads into that pod today. I hope you enjoyed it. We've had Stuart Barnes on, we've had Stephen Jones on, we've had Mark Quater, we've had Adam Rabwell, we've capped off a bit of London Irish, Champions Cup, Challenge Cup, Premiership Final, everything else. So there's loads going on. There's one more pod to go for the season. We'll review the Premiership Final and then we might have a little break and come back for World Cup, which is roaring around the corner. But for now, that has been The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Follow and subscribe, tell all your friends, and join us for one more lap around the island next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.